will get it going, right?
This morning I'm going to be sharing with you a process we went through to regionalize health planning in the Lower Hudson Valley of New York. So I would like to acknowledge my collaborators, Dr. John Fussell, who's the commissioner of the Rockland County Department of Health, Oscar Allen, their epidemiologist, Linda Harlick, who is an outstanding project manager and worked with us for 2 years, my colleague at New York Medical College, Dr. Peter Arno, and put a little plug, Linda and Oscar are also doctoral candidates in our doctoral program, and we're booth 6124, come see us. And other than plugging the doctoral program, I have no relationships to disclose. I'd like to define our use of the term regionalization, because I think if you look at what's been written of regionalization efforts in the past few years, there are probably two processes or two streams that regionalization can follow. The first horizontal, I find, with this emphasis on service rationalization, works better for the delivery of medical care. Think about large hospital consortia, but also generally not only denotes but connotes this thought of merging and consolidating services. And that's not how we approach this regionalization effort. We were more concerned with not just resource sharing, but having this emphasis on priority setting and health policy formation itself. And so we took more of this, what is referred to as this vertically integrated approach, but really we were looking at cross-jurisdictional sharing. Think about 7 regional health departments that were set up along these geopolitical boundaries, and we were looking to cross over, share resources, best practices, but actually come up with a way that we could address common needs among all 7 of the counties. So it's a little bit more of a comprehensive approach, obviously, because of the inherent complexities of planning to improve a public health capacity in health departments. So our area covers roughly 2,300,000 residents over 5,000 square miles. The health departments here in the Lower Hudson Valley, just like those across the U.S., have some common functionality, obviously. They meet nationally recognized standards with monitoring and assessing the health status of communities, educating and protecting communities from health problems and hazards, training the public health force, and enforcing public health laws, and basically applying evidence base behind public health to design interventions and programs that promote population health and improve population health. So our effort specifically was focused on this region, and we were aided with a very generous $1 million grant that we were awarded from the New York State Department of Health. We were also able to work through the 7 counties. There was an existing group, the Regional Health Officers Network in Hudson Valley, that consisted of all 7 commissioners. And so although they did meet every so often and discuss issues that were confronting their own health departments and trying to get a sense of, you know, how could we deal with this, there was really no other formal structure. And so this is what we were going to undertake. Therefore, we defined 4 steps in our scope of work, and I'm going to go through each of these steps. First, we had a thought that we needed to conduct a regional health assessment to have a sense of priority areas and existing health system partnerships. We then wanted to come up with a participatory data collection effort, some instrument that we could administer to residents and to providers to get a better sense of common health needs and priorities and service issues within the 7 county health departments. We then undertook the task of taking all this data from the survey instrument and the focus groups and providing some analysis on the local level by county as well as the regional level, and then had a process where we would develop and disseminate recommendations for initiatives targeted to improving health outcomes in the priority areas that we would identify. To undertake something like this required a little bit of a tightly structured organization. This is where I think our project manager was critical. And our steering committee or advisory committee consisted of the 7 county health departments. The project team consisted of representatives from each of these county health departments in areas from epidemiology to health education to health policy planning. And of course, we had a series of conference calls, meetings. I can't tell you that there wasn't anything we did that was not documented, that we did not take meeting minutes, and that were not posted on a web portal that we had for the project team. And so our first scope of work was this regional health assessment or preliminary assessment to help us identify priority areas that we would address across all seven counties. And what we relied upon first were the community health assessments that each county are required to go through every 3 years by New York State. And we looked at those from the 2005 to 2009 period. And we read through each of them and we mapped out those health priority areas, issues of concern for all of the counties, the programs that they had in place to address these, and whether these programs had any type of outcome assessment tied to it. And we narrowed down to those priority areas that affected four or more counties. We put together a bit of analysis, a little show and tell for the commissioners, and with their feedback, narrowed down and decided to focus on these three areas. And they're all familiar to all of you, no surprise, I'm sure. We then had to get our data collection scope identified and worked through, and our concern here was that, and we felt very strongly, especially the health service researchers, that local surveys were critical in affirming these health priorities, and that it wasn't sufficient to rely upon the county level and state and national instruments out there, such as the behavioral risk factor surveillance, because generally their sample sizes made it very difficult to have meaningful data pulled down to the county level. In many cases, county level data is also pooled, and finer subdivisions are difficult to work with. And so what we did was we came up with an instrument that, yes, was based in part on some of these questions that are standard to these other instruments. We ended up with 46 questions, but also had questions designed to specifically address our and identify our priority areas and help us get a little bit more information about those. We also had the thought that we wanted to facilitate ongoing monitoring and identification of future priorities. So we wanted an instrument that we hoped the counties would continue to work with once the grant funding was expired. We then had to pilot test our instrument and, of course, administer it. And we had targeted a regional target of about 6,000 surveys to assure statistical significance. And what we did to allow a little bit of efficiencies and streamlining is we actually administered our regional performance monitoring tools, what we referred to the survey, during the same period that the health departments were conducting their community health assessment. So this was in the fall of June 2009, so in the fall of 2009, they were going through the 2010-2013 community health assessment. And we also provided a little bit of a labor pool for them to do this. We had a lot of our graduate students out in the field. We were at motor vehicles, libraries, shopping centers, trying to get these surveys distributed across the seven counties, as well as relying on some online tools to do that. And we ended up collecting over 6,900 of these. We also surveyed healthcare providers across the seven counties with a smaller tool, and we targeted a couple of hundred of these to get a better understanding of issues facing them and their patients, in particular barriers that their patients were facing in accessing care. We were also concerned with how these providers were reacting to the current market. Were they going to be expanding and adding on services or actually contracting and being in a position not to provide some of the care they'd been providing? And so, as you might expect, the advantage of the local survey effort was that we were able to oversample those populations that we knew were important for us to understand what was going on with respect to their healthcare needs being addressed and who were known to underutilize the healthcare system. And so we were able to oversample those in lower income as well as those of Black and Hispanic backgrounds. The next part of this was a series of focus groups that took place over probably a year or so, maybe a little, Linda's saying yes, about a year. And we, within each of the counties, the project teams assembled groups of various stakeholders, whether it was folks that worked in the Veterans Administration, that worked in the various perinatal groups, Planned Parenthood. It could be a religious organization that provided some sort of care or screening. Representatives from the community, and this was generally done, I can't say with carrot sticks, we probably did have a lot of donuts and coffee at these focus groups, but to get a sense of what was really happening on the ground level within each of these counties. And then we took this information, preliminary analysis from the surveys that had been administered to that point, as well as input from the provider surveys, as well as input from the focus groups, and we put the data together and tried to present data packets around these priority areas, and we said the next step here is to get folks in from out of the field to look at this and to tell us what they're doing to address some of these problems and concerns that have been raised as a result of this data effort. And we sent invites out there, and we had about 150 folks who showed up who represented all levels, all types of stakeholders and providers across the seven counties. And we had our keynote at that time was then our New York State Commissioner of Health, Dr. Richard Daines, who came in and gave his blessing to this effort and his support. And we presented this data. So if you can imagine that in the morning, we had a couple of folks who got up there and said, based on these priority areas, this is some of the data we've collected and some of the insights that we may be able to share with you. And then we asked them to work in breakout sessions in the afternoon. And they did this by their areas of expertise within these priority areas, and were given the same data to work with and say, for example, this is what's occurring in our county. Yes, this affirms that, and these are some programs we have that we address these. Because what we were trying to do now is get a sense of the initiatives and programs, and you think you get that when you do a community health assessment, but you really only get so much detail and information, right? So they had folks in the room sharing programs that we actually didn't know about or were hearing about for the first time. So one example is we're all concerned with weight, and we ask the standard questions, you know, report your height and weight so that we can calculate a BMI. We also asked our folks how they perceived themselves. And so what we found, and this is probably not surprising, is that although 87% of those who were of normal weight described their weight as normal, for overweight, 52% described their weight as overweight, and 47% described their weight as normal. And then for those who are obese, 16% described their weight as obese, 72% as overweight, and 12% as normal. So we kind of don't see ourselves, perhaps what the scale is telling us, we see ourselves differently. And so that may be okay, but one of the questions also allowed us to then look within these groups of how they saw themselves, whether their providers were advising them to lose weight or not. So we were wondering if the providers were following the BMI or the perception. And as you can see here, providers were largely following perception and not even doing such a great job at that. And so when we had our providers in the room and we were sharing this information, we said, what is it that we can do so that providers take on sometimes this uncomfortable discussion with their patients to increase and raise their awareness? And you'll see later on in one of the initiatives we developed was a BMI awareness toolkit. So following the summit, we took what was over probably 200 recommendations, and we tried to whittle them down based on some selection criteria that had to do with the resources required, degree of difficulty involved, as well as high probability that we could get sought-after changes in the priority area. I mean, one thing that we did want to emphasize was, would we be able to come back later on and evaluate results, you know, look at what had happened. And so several initiatives were combined to generate seven recommendations that were further developed using the CDC framework for evaluating public health programs. And if you're not familiar with the framework, it's an easy Google, but it's very precise steps in evaluation practice and standards for effective evaluation. So it's a commonly accepted framework, and it provided a very good methodological step for us to get to these seven recommendations. And you'll see that under chronic disease, reducing prevalence obesity was a very important area for us, and we had developed this BMI awareness program. So I'm going to quickly get us through a couple of the other things that we did, and it seems very straightforward, but we really needed to have some straight talk on disparities in our region, which we did unearth from our survey. And so we have a wide distribution and screening of the documentary on natural causes. Highly recommend it to you either within your own place of practice or if you're in a university setting. It's a great movie night for the students. But we had, we trained the trainer, and we had facilitated discussions and workshops and public dialogues, and this is still taking place. we realized that we had seven counties coming up with seven healthy messages about things like diabetes, right, and lowering cholesterol and things of that nature. And so what we did was we said, how could we consolidate this into one messaging center, if you will, to come up with one set of messages and then share them among the seven counties. Imagine how resource savvy that is. And how much sense this makes. And it would seem so obvious, but without this whole year process, this probably would not have happened. And this is under development, and this is probably a very cool thing, very easy to implement. Something else that was, I think, one of the most exciting things that I'm sharing today is the C-section checklist. It's kind of a la Atul Gawande checklist, but believe it or not, there was one hospital in one of the counties that had this checklist and had demonstrated decreases in the number of C-sections, unnecessary C-sections that were being performed. What a beautiful thing. This was easy to share across all seven counties, the hospitals and local agencies through our perinatal network, and to say this was something that was very low cost, high tech, right, and that we could have some measurable outcomes later on as the hospitals put these into practice. And so we just had our summit in August. So what I'm presenting to you is hot off the presses. I'm still working on the manuscript. Again, this is the process. A lot of papers probably on the data that we uncovered to follow. But we did have a capstone summit this past August, pulled together as many of those same 150 people, and basically discussed the need for the external validation of our regional planning, so some of our next steps. We had as our guest speaker Dr. Davis, who's our regional health administrator from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, to really emphasize this follow-up and this benchmarking. And we are in the throes of putting together a project web portal that will have listservs and will group by priorities those stakeholders and providers and folks working on them so that they can continue to communicate and get the most up-to-date information.